for joining me here on this Thursday, January 11th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host. So next hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for this Thursday edition of the show, what I like to call our Thursday meeting show. Two professional handicappers join us. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. The second, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We're going to wrap up the college football season with both of our handicappers today. Talk about what worked for them, what didn't, and what they may try to incorporate as they head into the 2018 season. With Brad, we'll talk about all four NFL divisional round playoff games here that are coming up this weekend. With Rolf, we'll talk about the two NFC games and then talk some college basketball with him as well. Over at bangabook.com, lots of great stuff going on. You've got Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks. Those have been fantastic here this season. Great return on investment with those, so make sure that you're checking those out. I wrote up a how to bet preview piece for tonight's Cavs versus Raptors game, so you can check that out over there as well. Golf previews every week, UFC previews every week, game previews for college basketball, NBA, NHL, NFL. So much going on out there in the marketplace right now. We're on top of everything over at bangabook.com. And make sure that if you've missed any of the shows here this week, a lot of the talking points, and I do this by design, have a long-term shelf life. So if you're not able to get the show day of or even the next day, you know, we try to set things up so that when you can get to it, it still has some relevance for you. So if you've missed anything here this week, make sure that you go back and check that out over at bangabook.com. While you're there, check out our sportsbook reviews as well. You know about that DSI promo code, BTB25. Good for a $25 free bet, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. Same thing for the live casino. If you have an account at DSI or if you don't want to sign up with them, check out our sportsbook reviews. All the most reputable names in the industry, exclusive promo codes available for those outlets, and you know, reviews of deposit methods, withdrawal methods, perks that the books offer, reduced juice, teasers, you know, pushes win at five dimes, stuff like that. We talk about all that over there in those sportsbook reviews. So please check those out. Two guests join me here on this Thursday edition of the show. The first, Mr. Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
It's going well. Good to hear your voice on this fine, beautiful Thursday morning.
Good to chat with you as well. Plenty of things to get to here on our segment today. And, you know, Brad, I know that college football is a year-round job for you. And we've talked about that in the past where you're already doing work on 2018 so you can be ready for those season win totals, the futures odds, the games of the year lines, that type of thing. So it's not like the season really ever ends for you, but the 2017 season has ended. Last game, of course, on Monday with Alabama knocking off Georgia in the national championship game. Bulldogs did cover the number there, though. Let's sort of recap your 2017 season. Where do you feel like you excelled? What do you think really worked well for you?
Well, I thought what really worked well was a lot of the work that I did at starting this time of year and getting in preparation for, you know, the off-season betting, whether it be the season win total, the early game of the year lines, the early week one lines, everything that pretty much came out there in mid-May at CG Technology and then at the end of May at South Point. That worked extremely well for me, where I wish I could have that kind of success on a week-to-week basis during the regular season, but you know, all that extra work is worth it, showed a profit, and was able to get a lot of my customers a significant profit, those that were able to come here in Vegas and bet a lot of those lines. So very excited about that point of the and part of the process, the handicapping. Maybe another one was another thing I took advantage here, being in Vegas this year, you know, betting on the win. The world openers are at least in Vegas, the openers on a week-to-week basis, every Sunday afternoon, getting ready and betting some soft lines there. And that was advantageous and showed a great profit in that regard. So those two things there are very positive. The negative for me was, you know, I didn't have a good college football season, and it was a losing season on a week-to-week basis if you just go from week one through week 15. And you know, part of my issue and doing some reflection back is I probably should have carried over some of my thought processes and early thoughts on teams that I had in the offseason. I'll use an example. Florida Atlantic was my number one season win total best bet, over four wins. It was by far my biggest bet and by far my strongest, you know, consideration and recommendation for my customers out there. Well, I looked throughout the course of the season, how many times did I back Florida Atlantic? Backed them week one against Navy and really didn't go back to the well. Should have, because after that non-cover against Navy, there's a team that went 10-3 against the spread. You know, one of my favorite under teams season win total was Colorado, coming off that outlier season a year ago, at least in 2016. Now I bet them under their season win total, and I looked through, you know, game by game, how many times was I against Colorado? Not enough. I mean, a team went 3-9 against the spread, so that's something that I'm going to look to carry over more towards this season, include some of my gut instincts, and you know, not try to, you know, listen to a lot of people and create a lot of paralysis by overanalysis.
Well, a lot of things to unpack there about what you had success with and where you feel like you had some shortcomings. And one of the things I think is a common theme with what you talked about, and this is something that we discussed over the summer as well, why you prioritize doing so much with the season win totals and the games of the year lines, is that at that point, it's you against the book. On a week-by-week basis with college football, it's you against the book. It's you against the market. It's you against the natural inherent variance of a one-game sample size. So, you know, really, I'm not surprised that you had a lot of success early on when, you know, you were able to do the deep dive. You were able to get those edges and those advantages that you were looking for. Throughout the week, you know, I'm sure there are some plays that you wish you could take back, but you're going off your numbers. You're going off of things that have worked for you in the past. Maybe you just fell victim to variance a little bit. And I think it's a very important lesson for our listeners out there. And another part of the reason why live betting, you know, has become so popular is that you can actually see some things. You can actually see how things are playing out a little bit. And by association, you limit the variance in that game. In a similar sense, when you're doing these season win totals and you've got 12 games to where you need a team to go 8-4 to cash in over 7.5, you know, you can put a higher percentage likelihood on that. There's less variance in that. And, you know, I mean, I think that it's something, honestly, that, you know, a lot of our listeners should consider for next year. You don't have the roller coaster emotional swings of, you know, a good week 4, a bad week 5. Your plays are out there. They're there in advance. If you have to hedge in the final weeks, you can. But, you know, you're playing against a softer market because it's you against the books, not you against the world.
Yeah, and it's literally the one time a year, and I know you get a lot of, you know, services out there that you know, guaranteed winners, 70, 80, 90% trends and all that stuff. But, you know, I can tell you this. I'm very disappointed if I don't win 60% of those bets as far as season win total, early game of the year lines and that. That is the one market where if you know what you're doing, you put the homework and it's you against the book. And let's face it, the books are up against it because they want some action. And let's face it, they're not too disappointed that they get to hold your money for 6 months for a lot of those. So that's where they're making their money. They get to hold your money for that long period. But they're also doing other sports. And if you do a little specialization, there's a good chance that you have better numbers than the book does. And, you know, going off of that, I'll say this, and I say this to a lot of my customers, is if you're really serious about this industry, and you do have, you know, a bankroll that you can set aside for those 3 to 6 months that can be tied up there, I think it's worth the trip. Airfare is cheap to come out here in Vegas. And if you want to come out when the South Point does that on Memorial Day weekend or whatever weekend they choose this year, I think it's a good investment, especially if you're deep diving into teams and kind of have an idea at that point in the season. I think that's some of the best bets you can make all season long. Is that time of year. It's just the problem, not a lot of people can tie their money up for 3 to 6 months.
Now, what else would you recommend to listeners going forward? I mean, like I said, we've talked a lot about live betting here this season and about the advantages that come along with that. And, you know, obviously if you have access to that, you know, it's something you should be taking advantage of whenever you can. If you sit down to watch a game, you know, pick up some things during that game, make some smart observations, you can cash some of those live tickets. If you're using a local and you don't trust the offshore industry, or you're not out, you know, in Nevada where betting is legal, then sure, I understand that in-game wagering is a very difficult thing for you to do. But, you know, maybe aside from that, Brad, since not everybody has access to it, you know, as you go into 2018 here, is there something that, you know, you would recommend our listeners really keep in mind gearing up for the next year?
You know, since there's so many other things available, I would say, you know, get a second out would be priority number one. If you're still relying on that one bookie, man, then you need to at least reset your expectations because it's so tough to win. Not saying that you can have a winning year. I'm just saying the chances of you having a winning season year after year, if you're still betting with the local bookie, it's really much come to pass. It just is not going to happen on a consistent basis. So, I would say get yourself another out. And, you know, the Supreme Court here, either this spring or this summer, is probably going to afford you an out, because I think the thing is going to get legalized in the state of New Jersey, and then it might even get to the ballot by next year as far as voting on legalization. So I think we're within a couple of years of multiple states having it. That'll be a positive. But I would say overall, you know, one thing that I'll take is, you know, I was very happy with my handicapping and my early bets on Sundays. Not very happy with what I gave out, you know, midweek to a lot of my customers. But one thing I noticed this year was a lot of late day, game day, steam moves, line moves that to me just were flat out wrong. And I'll probably look to really get myself and take part in that this year more than I have in the last couple of years. I thought if you're waiting on game day to bet, a lot of times that's a losing proposition. But, man, I would have loved to play against what I would say overreaction, that steam money line moves where, you know, they'd already moved 3 points throughout the course of the week, and then on game day they'll move an extra 2-3 points. And that's the kind of stuff I wouldn't mind playing against on game day, and something I'll definitely take more advantage of.
Well, and that's such a hard discussion, and one that we can have for another day, because as a handicapper – you know, you have to put your premium card out there early enough for people to actually take advantage of it. And there are some games that I imagine moved into range for you, or some moves that you did want to go against that you can't release those to clients. And obviously you can do them from a personal standpoint, and I'm sure that you did with a fair number of those games. But that's another part of the hardship here for you, is that, you know, and we've talked about this in the past, now that you're out there in Vegas, you're trying to balance being a bettor with your personal bankroll and a handicapper with people that subscribe to your newsletter, subscribe to your service. And, you know, sometimes when those lines are a little bit harder to, you know, to follow, then it's something that can create a little bit of a problem for you, because, you know, you can't focus as much on the handicap of the game as you would like to. And, you know, maybe that's something that, you know, that all of our guests and everybody out there in that side of the industry will have to, you know, consider down the line.
Oh, yeah, I would say, you know, text clubs, you know, second half clubs. I mean, that's the way we're moving as the live betting gets more and more prominent. And then if you get multiple states that are available, then it's a lot easier. But, yeah, that game day stuff, during game, live game, that's the new wave. And I expect there to be, you know, and that would kind of remind me of what it was maybe 20 years ago with your Sun Belt MAC conferences and a lot of your Group of Five conferences. That's kind of the wild, wild west where – if you got a good beat, you're sitting there watching a Conference USA game or a Sun Belt game, it's live and you know what happens. And if you can just fire off, you know, a text club or a pick in-game live or a second half, I think that can, and that sort of thing, at least for a couple-year period until the markets get a little bit sharper, I think can be very profitable. And the problem is probably only 10% of my customer base can take advantage of it. And that's the unfortunate thing, but, you know, I'm not going to sit here and cry over spilled milk.
All right, let's transition over to the NFL side of things here, and let's talk about these four divisional round games, beginning with the first one on the board Saturday, game 301-302. Atlanta takes on Philadelphia. The 2.5s that were out there in the marketplace early on in the week have been long gone here for a couple of days, sitting 3 with varying juice across the board, books kind of shading the sides that they need or shading the sides where they expect money to come in here later in the week. So, Brad, this is a pretty interesting one. I mean, you've got everybody on that key number of 3, different numbers out there, so that speaks again to that point of having multiple outs. How do you break this one down?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, it's a significant line because it's the first time ever a number one seed's been listed as an underdog in its opening round game of the NFL playoffs. Obviously, almost all of it has to do with the Eagles losing Carson Wentz. I mean, you could have made a case. I mean, he was up for MVP this year. Their offense during that first 13 games, averaging 30 points per game. Now, at least the expectation was when Foles took over, I mean, you thought he'd be one of the better backups in the National Football League. I mean, he had the great 2013 season, but he's been a major disappointment. I mean, the Eagles averages 16 points per game their last 3 games, and he's really struggled with a 41 quarterback rating for him, that would put him in the bottom 5 of the NFL. So that's why you've had a significant line move. But I'm going to take advantage of it, and I'm going to take Philadelphia +3. I mean, Foles doesn't have to win this game himself. I mean, last I checked, the Eagles still have the 3rd best rush offense in the NFL. defense, they're number one against the run, number four in total yards allowed, number four in scoring defense. And I think the travel situation for Atlanta, this is their fourth road game in 5 weeks for them, and they just traveled across the country. And I know they got the playoff experience edge here, but, you know, I'll gladly take Philadelphia plus three. And, you know, what I posed, you know, I know the public, three ain't that bad. I mean, Atlanta, they looked so good last week. Philadelphia's looked like trash the last couple weeks. You know, three, what if this was an Atlanta home game? And I would say, you know, typical three-point home field advantage probably is 3.5 this time of year because it's the playoffs. Would you be willing to bet Atlanta minus 10 if they were hosting this game? I think a lot of people would be second-guessing that. So if you're not willing to lay 10 at home, why are you laying three on the road? So I'm taking the Eagles plus three, and it's what I gave out to my client.
Yeah, I think this is such an interesting game because if you consider this game being on a neutral, Atlanta minus six, Atlanta maybe minus 6.5 if you factor in four road games in 5 weeks plus, you know, home field advantage in the playoffs should mean a little bit more. You know, so is that really a number that you'd be comfortable laying with Atlanta? I mean, this is an Atlanta team that moved the ball effectively throughout the season, but when the Falcons got into the red zone, they had a really hard time cashing in on their opportunities. And that's what made them so much less efficient than last year when they had Kyle Shanahan, a guy with great play design in the red zone. They didn't have that with Steve Sarkisian this year. Now, Matt Ryan has gotten more comfortable as the season has gone along, but still, you know, do you trust this Atlanta team to go and beat this Philadelphia defense, beat this Philadelphia running game on the road in such a difficult spot? I don't know. But the thing is, for me, you know, I don't think I can play Philadelphia in this game because I don't know how much of the burden falls on Nick Foles. You know, does Atlanta try to take away the run? Dan Quinn is a brilliant defensive mind. Does Atlanta try to take away the run? If so, can Nick Foles complete those RPOs? Can Nick Foles avoid the bad turnovers? I don't know. If this becomes a game where Philadelphia needs Nick Foles to go out and win it for them, that's what scares me, and that's what would keep me off of this number, even though, as you broke down there, I do think that this line is a little bit high.
Yeah, and look, the market spoke for itself. I mean, there were some two and a half out there earlier. Public jumped on Atlanta. I think the pros even jumped on Atlanta early, knowing that it would go to three. But for me, I think we'll see some buyback on Philadelphia plus the three. And I get it. I mean, if you can't trust Foles, then stay off of it. And that's the advantage that you have over the bookmaker. The one big advantage you have over it. Look, the bookmaker has the ungodly, unsightly minus 110 up against that you got to go against. But the advantage that you have is you can pick and choose where you think the soft spots are. So if you have a major issue with trying to back Foles here, then to me, then that's a negative. If you don't think he can move the football, then why not back the under, especially you can get a 41.5 out there at a lot of places. I would back the under because, look, Atlanta's offense has taken a step back this year without Kyle Shanahan. They haven't topped 26 points in any of their last six games, even though they've had some success. Their defense is actually much better than what they were last year when they made the Super Bowl. And if you don't think Philadelphia can move the football, and obviously they struggled to move the football each of the last two games, but they still own one of the top five defenses in the league, I would say if you got too many questions, don't want to lay three on the road, can't trust Foles, under 41.5 sounds pretty good to me.
No, I completely agree. And when you've got a guy like Dan Quinn, you've got a guy like Jim Schwartz, you know, having a big hand in the defensive game plan here, you know, I think that's something you can take to the bank with confidence when you talk about the playoffs, when you talk about how much film study goes in, how invested and engaged all the players are. You know, I think under would definitely be the way to look here in this one. All right, let's go to the first of two AFC games this weekend. Tennessee takes on New England, game 303-304. New England favored by pretty much 13.5 out there in the market. Looks like the consensus opinion. There's a 14 at Bovada, 13 at the Greek, 13 at bookmakers. So maybe Tennessee a little bit of a sharpish kind of side here in this one. But, you know, Brad, you talk about the New England Patriots, and you talk about Bill Belichick not taking his foot off the gas. That's got to be a big-time worry for Tennessee backers this week.
To say the least, because, you know, you're not going to see Bill Belichick and Tom Brady blow a 21-3 halftime lead like what we saw last week in Kansas City. And kudos to Tennessee for pulling it off. I mean, obviously, some of the blame's got to go on Kansas City and the offensive play calling. But also Tennessee showed me a little bit of something, particularly Marcus Mariota showed his legs a little bit and obviously caught a kind of a fluky touchdown pass. And I thought a blessing in disguise that Derrick Henry got the brunt of the carries with DeMarco Murray being out. It really could feature him, and he had a monster game. But, you know, for me, just generally speaking, when I see a 13.5 line in the NFL, it's dog or pass probably 90-some% of the time for me. And it's mainly pass when I'm going up against New England, because it's remarkable. They're 11-2 against the spread the last 13 times they've been laying double digits. And you would have thought that after they probably had the greatest against the spread season in the history of the National Football League, going 16-3 last year, you thought that they'd be overpriced in the marketplace. The prices can't get high enough for New England. They covered 11 of their 16 games. They actually covered 9 of their last 10 as they grabbed the number one seed. And another worry for me is all the media hoopla about this story that, you know, Kraft, Brady, and Belichick aren't getting along with the Jimmy G trade and all that. We've seen it in the past. That usually motivates and galvanizes this team. So you really can't talk me into a Tennessee plus 13.5. Maybe a 14, I'd start to get interested. But right now, for me, slight lean towards the Pats, and I'll be looking more at the total than anything in this game.
Well, and you certainly have to wonder, too, when you talk about the stuff that's going on behind the scenes, there's also some stuff going on out in the public eye, and that would be Matt Patricia taking a lot of interviews, probably going to get a head coaching job here whenever New England's done in the playoffs. Josh McDaniels, his name comes up every single year for a possible head coaching job. You know, how long does this 40-year-old Tom Brady want to keep going out there instead of just staying home with Giselle? You know, so you kind of wonder for this Patriots team, is this not a last hurrah per se, but just, you know, sort of knowing that, hey, the band is together for right now. We're going to have to get some replacement coaches, some replacement players, that type of thing. Let's go out here and rattle off another one. And, you know, I mean, they have to be very happy to not be seeing Kansas City here this week, because Kansas City, you know, it has those key guys at certain positions to possibly pull off an upset or at the very least keep this game close. I don't know if Tennessee has that, because for Tennessee, they were able to come back last week on Kansas City, mostly because Travis Kelce went out, and that kind of changed the offensive game plan for what the Chiefs were doing. You know, New England sets up in a similar way with a guy like Rob Gronkowski. And also what New England does throwing to the running backs is something that allows them to really dictate time of possession, probably limit possessions in this game. And Tennessee is not an overly efficient offense. They run the football a lot. They try to keep Mariota from making bad decisions. If this becomes a game that falls on Marcus Mariota's shoulders, bad decisions will probably come. I don't know if you want to bet on that, you know, second half hurrah back-to-back weeks with this team.
No. And you know, that was more of an outlier than anything last week, because let's face it, Tennessee, Marcus Mariota in particular, had struggled all season long, particularly on the road. I mean, he had a negative touchdown interception ratio on the season. So they're a type of team that usually, when they get down double digits, really don't have any hope of coming back, because they're a run-oriented team. For me, where I'm starting to look, and obviously I'm a little bit worried with Patricia taking all these interviews, you know, is the defensive game plan going to be there for New England? Because, you know, that's one area where they have improved. I mean, they were the worst defense in the National Football League the first four games of the season, but man, in the last 12 games, I mean, the defense has allowed just 14 points per game, and they've been a big reason why they've had that cover streak so far. And really, prior to that offensive explosion for Tennessee in the second half against Kansas City, I mean, they had top 24 points in any of their last 10 previous 10 games. So they have really hadn't shown any offensive firepower. And what I'm kind of getting at is my lean on the game. And again, it's probably my weakest lean of the entire, I would say, weekend side or total. I'm going to lean with the under, and the money's a little bit against me now because it looks like you can get a 48 out in the marketplace, but I'm going with under 48 in the game.
All right, we'll move on to the other AFC game here. This one, the first game on Sunday, Jacksonville takes on Pittsburgh, 305, 306 on your rotation order. There were some 7.5s out there last night in the market, Brad, although they were heavily juiced. Most of those are gone now. Several of the books that had 7.5 minus $1.20, minus $1.25, have gone down to 7 now. So as we get closer to game time, and we generally see a lot of sharp involvement in that Wednesday, Thursday type of period on these games as limits get increased, we're seeing Jacksonville as the sharp side here in this one.
We are, and maybe a little bit surprising to me, especially since Jacksonville looked so inept last week, and we're coming off of a couple of losses prior to it. I mean, I expected Jacksonville to roll last week and even cover that big point spread. I mean, offensively, they were atrocious. And when you have Blake Bortles having more rushing yards than passing yards, to me, it shows that they don't trust him throwing the football. And if they don't trust him throwing a football and they're one-dimensional, tough for me seeing them scoring a lot of points in this one. But, you know, let's look at it. I mean, this is a rematch between a Week 5 matchup where the Jags went in as 7.5-point underdogs and won outright 30-9. Big Ben 5 times in the game. That was his career high as far as interceptions thrown, and they returned a couple for touchdowns. So I think since then, the Steelers have been a better team. I mean, they've won 10 of their last 11 games. They only lost that controversial, you know, last-second loss to the Patriots. They get back Antonio Brown. We'll see if he's going to be 100% healthy. But, man, I mean, Big Ben's a 6-1 against the spread at home in the postseason, and they got revenge. They're going to have the weather. It's going to be very cold in that particular setting. I'm a little bit surprised that the sharper side seems to be Jacksonville here. I'll wait and see if I can get a 7 minus 110. And if that's the case, I'll have a bet on the Steelers. But for me, more of my money and my bigger bet's going to be on the under.
Yeah, I'm actually seeing some 7 minus 05 out there in the marketplace right now, that being at Pinnacle. So, you know, obviously that's not one that's the book that U.S. players can reach unless they were kind of grandfathered in. But even bookmaker, 7 minus 110, so the regular 7 flat there with that one. Heritage has got 7 minus 105 on both sides. So there are some out there to be had. Now you kind of start wondering a little bit if there's a chance this thing goes, you know, 7 minus 05 market wide, maybe 7 even money. Won't get to 6.5, I wouldn't think, because you'd have way too many guys invested in plus 7.5 and minus 6.5 looking for that middle. But, you know, I imagine part of this here too, Brad, and not that I necessarily agree with this take, is that you've got this low total in the 40.5, 41 range, you know, high spread, low total. For some numbers, guys out there, when you look at that correlation, the percentage of the spread relative to the total, they're going to hop on it almost blindly. And I don't really love that approach here in this game with a Pittsburgh offense that's much, much different than it was when these two teams met in Week 5.
Yeah, and that's probably what the play is there. I mean, you do have a top-5 defense in Jacksonville, low total. The weather's supposed to be relatively cold there in Pittsburgh on Sunday. I get it, you know, taking a defensive-oriented team with a low total, getting more than a touchdown. But and look, I also get the fact that maybe Pittsburgh's offense, you know, let's face it, the starters didn't play in Week 17 against the Browns, and obviously they had last week off. So will there be a little bit of rust on that side of the ball for the Steelers? And that's the case there. I mean, it's tough laying more than a touchdown if you're having trouble scoring. To me, it just continues to lead, at least for me, towards the under. Now, it is one of the lowest totals we've seen in a Pittsburgh game all season. I think it's the third lowest that we've seen. But I think the combination of weather, maybe more of a conservative game plan. You don't want Big Ben out there throwing a bunch of picks like he did in the first matchup. And the fact that I expect Jacksonville not to trust Blake Bortles. They certainly didn't trust him last week at home. How in the heck are you going to trust him on the road against a better defense in Pittsburgh, even without Shazier? And that's why I like the under, and it's one of my favorite totals plays of the weekend.
Last game here in the divisional round, New Orleans takes on Minnesota. This number is 5 pretty much market-wide now, and this is one that we saw some movement on yesterday, a little bit more movement here on the overnights as well, where last night when you looked at the screen, there were some 4.5s. Most of those are gone, and it's not a significant move to go from 4.5 to 5 by any means, but when you consider that this number started at 3.5 early in the week, we've gone through 4, which is kind of a key number. We're up to 5 now. Looks like this is a very strong, sharp opinion on the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, especially if you're a believer in a lot of the sites that offer the, you know, the betting percentages out there. And New Orleans looks like they're the public side. So if there's one pros versus Joes game this weekend, and it actually is lining up for maybe even New England, Tennessee with some Tennessee money, and even Jacksonville, Pittsburgh being maybe a little bit of a pros versus Joes game. But with the significant line movement that we've seen here, despite the fact New Orleans is getting almost 2/3 of the tickets, you know, clearly the bigger money's on Minnesota. And I agree with it. You know, Minnesota you know, my newsletter that I offer to my customers, you know, after the fact, and not afraid to always mention after the fact what I gave out yesterday when I released it, but my top side play was Minnesota minus the 4. So got ahead of the line move. And my thinking going into that and why I liked Minnesota was, number one, well-rested. I mean, they come off 3 blowout wins and a bye week. They have the number one defense as far as scoring and total defense in the NFL. And they've been dominant at home. I mean, 7-1 straight up and against the spread. Average win by 12 points per game. They've been consistent. 11 of their 13 wins this year are by 8 points or more. So when they beat teams, they beat them by a margin. And even the loss that they had at home was a fluky game where they had a bunch of turnovers against Detroit and a couple of injuries in the game. Otherwise, they'd be unbeaten at home. And I started, at least to me, I'm seeing that New Orleans defense showing some fatigue in the last couple of games where they gave up more than 400 yards. And Carolina, I mean, the defense was on the field for 71 plays in 34 minutes last week with Carolina. And look, Case Keenum versus Drew Brees, and we're going to talk about that more, I'm thinking, here in a second. That's not ideal, especially to lay more than a field goal in that particular matchup. But, man, if Cam Newton can throw for nearly 400 yards, I think Case Keenum, at least throwing the football, can have some success against that Saints defense.
Well, the Saints defense as well, A.J. Klein out, Kenny Vaccaro out. So late in the season here as well, they've had some pretty significant injury losses. Klein is a huge loss. Klein was a great player that was stuck behind Luke Kuechly in Carolina, you know, winds up getting out of there, becomes a defensive captain. You know, you have to have that middle linebacker. I mean, he's almost kind of like a Sean Lee type of guy in that, you know, he's a very good run stopper. He's a little bit better in coverage than Sean Lee, I think. But he's that leader. He's that glue guy for that defense. And the thing about New Orleans is that they've been able to overcome it because offensively they're so good. They've got tremendous offensive balance. But, you know, once you get into the playoffs and you're playing good competition, comparable or better competition, that's where some of those things at the margins kind of start to show up a little bit. Maybe that's the case here in this game. Now, early on in the week, I did like New Orleans, and that's to sort of go into the next point, which you alluded to already, Drew Brees versus Case Keenum. You know, the big question I had with Pete Carmichael last week against Carolina was, do the Saints run the football? Do they try to be balanced like they have been? Or do you put the game in Drew Brees' hands because it's the playoffs, it's crunch time? You know, at 38 years old, he had his lowest number of pass attempts since, I think, like 2009 or 10. Whatever the stat was that I had pulled up on last week's show, you know, is the guy whose workload was managed with the playoffs in mind. And because that running game was so good, if this is up to Drew Brees, you know, I have full confidence in a guy like Drew Brees, no matter how good the defense is on the other side. So early on in the week, I liked New Orleans. I'm a little bit worried now with the context clues I'm seeing out there in the market. But if this is in Drew Brees' hands and we know the weapons that he has out of the backfield, you know, I think it's a tough draw for Minnesota to be spread out the way that a passing game to the running backs like the Saints, you know, can do.
Yeah, I mean, that's the fear that I have. And obviously he's coming off one of his better games that he's had against Carolina. And they needed him because it was completely on his shoulders because the run game was basically non-existent. I'm just, you know, my faith is in the consistency of the Minnesota defense. For me, I mean, yes, you would expect maybe New Orleans to try to be a little bit more balanced this week, but I think that's going to be a tough fall. I mean, the Minnesota rush defense really only had one bad game all season at Carolina, way back in week 13 for them. That was, you know, pretty much it because everyone else, they held 115 yards or less and only give up 84 yards on the season. And then, you know, you look at their pass defense. I mean, they haven't given up even 200 yards passing yards in any game since the Detroit game 5 games ago. So, I mean, they've been remarkably consistent even in pass defense. And look, they haven't faced a Drew Brees at least in a while, but I mean, they shut down Matty Ryan on the road, allowed him to, you know, held him to 173 yards and 9 points. And I think this home field in particular, the advantage, and the line's getting a little bit away from me now, but I thought when it at least was at 4, heck, I'm giving Minnesota 4 points of home field advantage. It's the first home playoff game in this brand-new stadium, one of the loudest venues that there will be. So I thought, man, that's where the value is. I'm giving 4 points to Minnesota as far as home field advantage. And, you know, pure power ratings for me has Minnesota just slightly better than New Orleans. That's why I recommended Minnesota minus the 4 in that regard. But there's no question Nothing's a slam dunk, nothing's a guarantee. And if I lose it, it's going to be because Drew Brees beat me. And that's the concern at least I have right now.
And to go back to that Minnesota-Carolina game, and that's how we'll wrap up this segment here, Jonathan Stewart broke free for a 60-yard touchdown early on in that game. On his other 15 carries, he only had 43 yards. Christian McCaffrey, 8 carries for 35 yards, only 3 catches for 18 yards. So if you want to look at that game as sort of a comp for what the Saints do on offense, you know, with Mark Ingram running for 5 yards per carry, Alvin Kamara being good out of the backfield as a receiver and as a runner, you know, Minnesota, outside of that 60-yard touchdown run, really did a good job of taking care of those two running backs that Carolina has. And Carolina, by that point in the season, had figured out how to use Christian McCaffrey. So, you know, maybe Minnesota, and Mike Zimmer is a brilliant defensive mind as well. You know, it seems like that's maybe kind of a theme here this week, because you got some really, really good defensive minds in a lot of these games. And, you know, who knows? We'll have to see how this one plays out and also see where this line ends up going. But Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com, what's going on over at the website right now, man?
Yeah, right now at the website, if you want to check out, I have every single issue of the newsletter that I've had this season. You can download for free right now and check out what I'm all about. And just not a pick seller, obviously. I put my heart and soul in that weekly newsletter each and every week. And if you're interested in the newsletter, I'll tell you what, you can get an early bird special for next year, both college and pro. All, it's just $49. You get it emailed to you weekly. It's 10 to 12 pages. You get every single game right up, not only in the NFL, but college football as well. And you also get monthly picks. I mean, if you're interested in some of my season win totals coming up here in college football and some other, you know, future market tickets, it's all included in the newsletter. $49. You're covered all the way through, not just the rest of this year, but all the way through next year's Super Bowl back in 2019. Sign up today. $49 is your cost. BradPowersSports.com.
And you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Take care.
Good stuff there with today's first guest, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. One more guest here on this Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Going great, Adam. Thank you.
Plenty of things to get to here on our segment today, and let's start with the same thing that I started with Brad during our last segment, wrapping up the college football season. I know that you do a lot of work as well. Your background with North Coast Sports and Phil Steele Publications just sort of has you in that mindset to be focused on college football, you know, 12 months out of the year, and be paying attention to returning starters, losses, coaching changes, recruiting, that type of thing. So I know that the college football season never really finishes for you, but the 2017 season has finished. So as you're looking back at how things played out for you, what do you feel like worked really well for you?
You know, for me, my move to Vegas really, really helped me tremendously. It allowed me to watch more Pac-12 games. And, you know, being on the East Coast, when those Pac-12 games start at 10 o'clock at night and you've been watching college football all day and you've got the NFL in the morning, it's tough to pay attention to those games. But being on the West Coast with the time zone, it's such an advantage being an early bird, having football start at 9 a.m., being able to watch the late games. It really, it truly benefited both sides and totals, especially with Pac-12 teams. So not a situation that everyone can benefit from, but certainly it helped me out.
All right, now where do you feel like maybe you fell a little bit short? Some things that, you know, maybe you've done in the past that didn't work out for you as well this year, or something you tried to change that just didn't work out? Because, you know, we have to be constantly evaluating, constantly adapting. So, you know, not all of us are out there hitting 70% on games or anything like that. So I'm sure there are some things where you felt that, you know, maybe you didn't do a good enough job. What would those be?
You know, my totals fell short of my expectations, and a lot of it was just not catching up with some of the offensive changes early this year. You know, I'm one to look at teams and treat the non-conference season differently than the conference. And you need to make those adjustments when the seasons change. And there were some advantages out there that I didn't take, where teams were very high scoring in non-conference play. When they got the conference play, they fell back into their old habits. So that's something I look at. You know, another thing I looked at was not taking advantage of some of the rivalries as well. You know, we look at the rivalries later in the year, and year in and year out after the season, I write myself a big note you know, regardless of this line, add 5 points to your line because those rivalry games are so important and the games are played so much closer to the vest. So, you know, although I've been doing it a long time and although I write myself those notes each year at the end of the season, you know, when the season starts, you start progressing and you, and those old habits fall back into place. So make sure everyone out there, you know, write yourself notes, send yourself an email. Anything that you're thinking now, it's a great time to do. And I do the same thing with coaches. There's some coaching tendencies that I see. I'm watching the game now. I send myself an email and I save it in the next year folder. Then I'll open it up and look at it that, yes, I remembered that note or that's something I did. So I'm looking to improve on that a little bit. And I have a lot of notes this year that I put into my 2018 football folder.
You know, and what's really interesting is when I talked to Brad Powers about that question, he was talking about some of his preseason, you know, the conclusions that he came to about some of these teams and mentioned that, you know, he wished that he had followed through a little bit more once the season began and had played on some of those season win totals that he was, you know, that he was invested in. And it sounds like sort of a similar thing to you in that, you know, you didn't follow through with as many things as you wanted to. You told yourself something, you came to a conclusion. That's one of the hardest things I think about handicapping is that week in and week out, and sometimes on a game by game basis, you have this crisis of confidence. You have this, you know, voice in the back of your head kind of second guessing things. And you know, what I often find as I talk to handicappers and as I look back at seasons for me, I just need to trust myself. I need to commit to believing in the work that I've done.
You know, and the same thing holds true even with basketball. You know, there's some teams, if I get hot on a team, I'm going to play that team, you know. And, you know, we've talked about Northern Colorado here on the show. We've talked about Portland State. And, you know, Northern Colorado is a perfect example. I was on it from the beginning of the year. I've used them on occasion. But then they go on the road, and then they're playing a second straight road game, and then I start to fade a little bit and say, well, you know, maybe this is the situation where they don't cover, and yet they continue to cover. So exactly right is if you have the thought and the confidence going into the process, continue to that process until it beats you. So what if you get beat once? Getting beat once doesn't hurt anyone. If you keep going back to the well and getting beat multiple times, that's the wrong situation. But, you know, you can win on the streak many times. You can only lose once. So if you have that mindset, continue to play it.
Last thing I'll ask you here from a college football standpoint, as we do get into the off season, and I know that our listeners are playing basketball, both NBA and college, some NHL. They're maybe looking ahead to Major League Baseball a little bit. NFL playoffs still going on as well, and we'll talk about those here in a second. You know, as listeners kind of transition into this college football offseason, as maybe they look back and sort of evaluate what they did this past year, what tips would you have for them, you know, in terms of preparation for 2018?
Don't believe what you read as far as the media goes. You know, don't worry about preseason AP top 25s. Don't worry about those situations. You know, right now I know Brad just did a consensus of top 25 teams. Well, I know back in the Phil Steele days when I used to poll people, those top 25 teams just get hashed around. Someone puts it out, someone looks, they don't want to leave a team on, they don't want to leave a team off. Those top 25 teams mean nothing. Do your own work. Have a good, solid ending number that you have now on your teams. Put that number in the bank. Now start looking at what teams have back, what their recruiting is, and make your own numbers going into next year. So, you know what? You'd be surprised how many people can be solid handicappers. They have enough information. They just know what to, they need to know what to filter out, what to keep, and continue to look forward.
All right, well, let's take a look at the NFL here for the divisional round, and I just want to touch on the two NFC games with you to make sure that we can spend ample time here on college basketball, and also these two NFC games, I think, a little bit more intriguing, especially from a line standpoint. So we'll get your thoughts here on Atlanta and Philadelphia, the Falcons, 3-point favorite out there across the board with reduced juice. You've got some even money. You've got some plus money. You've got a minus 102 at BetOnline. So Philadelphia is +3, but you're paying a little bit of extra juice to take the home dog here. How are you breaking this game down, Rolf?
Well, you know, I think you and I both agreed last week that Atlanta was the livest road dog with potential to win, and that came to fruition. But this game just has overreaction on both side and total all over it for me. You know, this is the first number one seed in the NFL to be a home dog since 1975, since they started the seeding process. And why are they a home dog? Obviously, with Carson Wentz and his 33-7 ratio out, Nick Foles came in, and they were feeble down the stretch, putting up 341 yards, 216 to Oakland, and then 219 to Dallas. But that was Nate Sudfeld. That wasn't him in the final game. You know, I look at Atlanta now on the road for the fourth time in 5 weeks. They had to go to at Tampa Bay, which was a playoff game. They went to at Carolina, which was basically a playoff game. They played Carolina. It was a playoff game. They went to the Rams. It was a playoff game. And now they're traveling again. You know, I think this line, you know, had they played last week, that means they would have been a 10-point dog. And I just don't see that. I will take Philadelphia with Nick Foles. They've had 3 weeks to work on him. He didn't play against the Dallas game. He had a bye week, and now he's back. This is still the same squad that has, you know, a solid defense, allowing 307 yards per game. They allow 17 first downs, which is very impressive, 3.8 yards per carry. Home dogs in the NFL the last 20 years, 26-13-2. To me, again, complete overreaction with an injury, complete overreaction because Atlanta won and Philadelphia didn't play. Philadelphia is still the better team at home with rest. They've been home for four straight weeks. They haven't traveled since game number 14 against the Giants, again, against four road trips in 5 weeks. I'll take Philadelphia.
Well, not only that, I mean, it's not like going from Philadelphia to the Meadowlands is a big travel either. So, I mean, they really haven't gone anywhere on quite some time, not since they played the Rams back on December 10th. And that was a string of three straight road games. That was kind of a team rallying experience up until the Carson Wentz injury, where they didn't play all that well against Seattle, stayed out on the West Coast. They were practicing at Angel Stadium, you know, put it together for that Rams game. And then, unfortunately, with Carson Wentz going out, kind of changed the dynamic of their season. But I think you bring up a lot of really strong points there. And so, you know, we'll move on to the other NFC game here between New Orleans and Minnesota. Minnesota up to a 5-point favorite now, pretty much market-wide. Bovada, $4.25 on Minnesota. Do you agree with this line move, Rolf?
You know, I'm indifferent in this game. I caught you and Brad talking on the end, and I understand all the Minnesota points. And I understand, you know, the Saints points. I guess I would agree with the line move, and simply because this. I mean, the Saints are two different teams, home and away. You know, while they've gone 10-3, they started the season with a loss at Minnesota. Well, that game doesn't count because he had Sam Bradford, a quarterback for Minnesota, and he had Adrian Peterson as the running back of the New Orleans Saints. So a lot has changed since they started the season in week one in the 29-19 loss to New England. And the Saints finished the season going 11-3 down the stretch. Well, the concerning part to me are those three losses were their last three road games. They went to the Rams. They got outgained by 69 yards and lost by 6. They went to Atlanta. They got outgained by 37 yards and lost by 3. Then they went to Tampa Bay, got outgained by 132 yards and lost by 7. So when you see the home road dichotomy, you know, and seeing what they've done on the road those last three times, I am concerned. You know, Minnesota, Case Keenum is doing what Case Keenum does. I mean, when you have – this is the Baltimore Ravens when, you know, when they won the Super Bowl. You had a young quarterback in Flacco. You had a defense that was number one in football. Your offense didn't have to do much, and this is exactly what they do. 23-10 over Chicago, 16-10 over Green Bay. Cincinnati, they had 34 points, but only 346 yards. I mean, the team's only averaging 385 yards at home, but again, a defense is allowing 249 yards. The key is not turning the ball over. And they did turn the ball over early. That was the difference. You know, they had minus 3 turnovers in the loss to Detroit, minus 1 to Pittsburgh. But down the stretch, they didn't. They won the turnover battle in 7. They won or tied the turnover battle in 7 of their last 8 games. So, again, if I had to pick a side, I agree with the Minnesota side. because, again, you have the best defense at home. I didn't watch Minnesota at home very often, but, you know, the Rams game I did watch, and that game just sticks in my mind, how loud that crowd was, how they completely disrupted. Now, again, that was Jared Goff at quarterback and not Breeze, but how they can completely disrupt a offense. You're going to get at least two or three penalties on the offensive side of the ball, and it's just very tough to play. So, again, I like the under in the game, and if I had to pick a side, it would probably be Minnesota.
All right, let's transition to the college basketball side here, and I want to focus on two conferences in particular, beginning with the Big East Conference. Now, this is basically the AAC of college basketball in the sense that you've got your Power 5 conferences, and there's sort of that sixth power conference that's right on the fringe. The Big East is that one, and honestly, it's not a fringe conference this year. This is a very, very good league, lots of high-caliber teams. This is such a fascinating conference for a lot of different reasons. For one thing, the geographic lineup of this conference, where you've got Creighton all the way out in Omaha, you've got Marquette up in Wisconsin, you've got a lot of teams on the East Coast with Philadelphia, with where Villanova is, you know, Seton Hall in the New York area, Providence, Georgetown down in D.C., you've got Butler out in Indianapolis, DePaul out in Illinois. So this conference is pretty spread out, and I picked up a pretty ugly loser earlier this week on Seton Hall when they were a pick'em against Marquette, and it kind of got me thinking. It sort of got the wheels churning of how I can use my bad bet as a pretty good segment here on the show. And, you know, there's just a lot of bad situational spots for teams here in this league because you play a lot of good competition. Then there are some bottom feeders that aren't all that good, and you can kind of fall victim to some of those spots.
Well, you know, we've talked about Georgetown before, how fake they were playing the number 351 schedule, the dead last schedule, and that's why they're 12-4. You're going to see them at the bottom of the conference when the season ends. You know, the Big East to me is potentially, you know, I have the ACC, I have the SEC, and maybe the Big 12, but besides that, the Big East Conference to me is right there. It's ahead of the Big 10, it's ahead of the Pac-12. You know, and it's ahead of the American. So I have them as one of the top four conferences this year. You know, and in fact, I have five of their teams, six teams probably in the top 30. So I agree with you. There's so many unique situations in this league. You know, you play teams that have the pressure defense like Villanova, and then you have the offensive scoring. This league has five of the top 15 offensive teams in the league. You talked about Marquette when they get up and down the court, and you have people scoring 52 points a game for Marquette with Marquise Howard and what he does. So, you know, I often look to play back to backs. I often look to play against teams in this conference when they are off an upset win. Because the road is so difficult, if you do pull the first upset in the two-game road trip, I usually look to play against them, and especially in this conference.
And I think it's so interesting. I mean, Villanova is the best team in the conference and quite possibly the best team in the country here. I didn't expect Creighton to be as good as they are. I certainly wouldn't have pegged Seton Hall as a top 15 team. I know they've got a couple of big-time star players there, but they're obviously off to a phenomenal start. Xavier has been a team that's been, you know, on the national landscape quite a bit, and Chris Mack just does such a great job with them. But even a team like Butler now that's down to 12-6, still a very good team. Providence, a very good team. Marquette, as you mentioned, they play a different style. They're going to make you run up and down the floor. You know, if you just got off of a tough road game and you got to go to Marquette, that's a pretty brutal spot for you as well. So are there rules of thumb that you'll look to follow in this conference in terms of the sides that you're going to like in these games?
You know, I don't have a specific conference rule. I mean, with all the conferences in college basketball, I have not been able to break down a situation for this. But, you know, you have to look at, you know, every team in this conference is above 500. Obviously, when you're playing your non-conference schedules, DePaul is at 8-8. They're the lowest of the teams. So, you know, to me, it is looking at how you've played, because when you're playing, you know, to me, I do find some value occasion playing on the unders, because when you're playing these Big East teams and you're playing some of these top offenses in the country, you know, the Villanova, Marquette, Butler, and Creighton are four of the top 20 offenses as far as efficiency goes. When you're playing those teams and you're getting inflated totals, you know, I then look to play against them when you're playing some of the teams that don't have those offenses, the Providences, the Georgetowns, the DePauls, the St. Johns. So from top to bottom in this conference, I think the value is not so much on the sides but on the totals, but because you have a discrepancy of elite to run-of-the-mill offenses. And I do look at totals in that case, but I haven't found anything with sides to break down this conference.
So as I said, we know Villanova is really good, and despite Xavier getting blown out last night by Villanova, we know that they're a very strong team as well. Let's talk about Creighton here. The Blue Jays in the top 25, 14-3 on the year. They're 4-1 in conference play, so they're off to a very nice start in the Big East. They're only lost on the road at Seton Hall, but they're 4-1 knocking off Providence, St. John's, Georgetown, and a Butler team that's had some issues. Butler's played a remarkably difficult schedule thus far, so not a big surprise to see them running into some difficulties. How legit is Creighton, and how quickly do we find out? I mean, do we find out with a road trip to Cincinnati to take on Xavier on Saturday? Do we find out next week when they host Seton Hall? You know, is this Creighton team a little bit overvalued, almost by association of being in this conference?
Well, I had them as my 43rd team coming into the country at the start of the year. You know, when you have Greg McDermott back, you know, for his eighth year, they only had two returning starters. So they have exceeded my expectations. They're a top 20 team now. And, you know, they get the advantage of people having to make that trip to Omaha. And that's where they have such a strong home court where they could beat anyone. A unique situation. Again, you talked about the unique travels. And, you know, when they get those people at home, they could face anyone. To me, what impresses me is they've done exactly what they should. Their three road losses were as a dog against Baylor in a neutral setting, at Gonzaga, and at Seton Hall. So if you only lose those games you're expected to lose and they've been away from home or in a neutral setting, you've pulled a couple upsets on the road, as you've said, and you've protected your home court. They are completely legit. I mean, you know, Marcus Foster and Kyrie Thomas are leading the way, and they picked up a couple nice recruits. They shoot the three, which is different than some of the teams in the conference, and at home they shoot the three as good as anyone. You know, they're a top 40 team as far as that goes. Their field goal percentage is one of the tops in the country. So I completely think they're a tournament team. They have a great setup on the following way coming home. You know, we'll see what they do against Villanova. Even if they lose at Villanova, you know, they have Villanova twice still. They play them on the road February 1st. They don't play them at home until February the 24th. But, you know, to me right now, they're going to lose maybe two or three more games. They're going to be a solid team, 5-6 losses on the year, and clearly a tournament team.
All right, well, then let's talk about the Seton Hall Pirates here, who, as I mentioned, a top 15 team. And, you know, they've got the star power. You've got Desi Rodriguez, Kadeem Carrington, Angel Delgado. After that, you know, Miles Powell's got almost 14 points per game, so he's playing pretty well. Also, after that, you kind of wonder about the bench scoring for this team. And you sort of wonder if the rigors of conference play will wear them down a little bit. Is Seton Hall a team that's kind of overachieving right now, or, you know, is this something that they can sustain?
Well, to me, they, you know, they're coming in and their schedule has not been that tough. You know, I had Seton Hall. Let's see where I had them at the beginning of the year. I had Seton Hall. They were off a 21-12 season last year, 10-8 in the conference. They had four returning starters, and I actually had them as my number 24 team. That's about where they are now, but they've been pretty heckle and Jekyll with me. You know, I thought they beat Rhode Island early. Rhode Island had a couple players missing. They got beaten at Rutgers. You know, the rack was packed that game. They had a complete sellout. And we saw what Rutgers did last night against Michigan State. So, you know, they're a legitimate team in Marquette. But I've seen them go through lapses where they just look so ordinary. So they're a difficult team for me to peg. I've been on the wrong side of them a couple times this year already, giving them out. So this is a team that I don't have an answer to. And, you know, as a handicapper, there's times that, you know, you read a team perfectly and you're on them the whole year, and there's times where you pick a couple games wrong and I just sort of lay off for a while, and that's where I am with this team. So I'm going to wait and see. You know, I think – you know, I think this conference is a conference that's going to get at least five teams in the tournament. Seton Hall can clearly be one of them at 14-3. They'll probably be, you know, probably have five, six more losses on the year, probably finish at like 22-9, and they'll be on the bubble for that tournament for me.
What about the bottom part of the league here? I mean, is there somebody that has some upside to move up? I mean, is Butler a team like that? Does Providence have some untapped potential? Do you see anybody, you know, really challenging Villanova, Xavier, Creighton?
No, I don't see anyone. I don't see anyone in that category at all. I mean, you know, besides Villanova. You know, once you have your Villanova, your Creighton, your Xavier, you know, Seton Hall would be the next best team for me. Seton Hall and Marquette in the next road. Butler, you know, Butler's going through their transition. You know, this is the second coaching change. Lavelle Jordan's done a great job. They had three starters back. But when you have the new coach going through those rigors, I don't think Butler has the staying power to get there at the end. And really, it's a three breakdown conference. It's clearly Villanova, Creighton, Xavier. Then it's Seton Hall, Marquette, Butler, Providence. And then it's Georgetown, DePaul, St. John. So I think you have three clear breaks in this conference with a bunch of middle guys perhaps finishing the season well to make the move up. But everyone on the bottom, Georgetown, DePaul, and St. John's, are teams that, you know, are in the 100 range as far as college basketball is concerned, 500 range now for the final season. And I don't see any of the Georgetowns. DePaul is my favorite team among Georgetown, DePaul, and St. John's. I think they finally have the program going in the right direction after so many numerous restarts. But to me, it's clearly the bottom three.
All right, let's go out west to the Pac-12 here, and let's talk about this league for a little bit. I think this league is very interesting. I mean, obviously, Arizona seems to be the team with the most upside. People fell in love with Arizona State early on in the year with some of the non-conference performances that they had. Then they lose a couple to Arizona and Colorado. Did salvage that altitude road trip with a win over Utah that probably won't get as much play as it should, but that's a really tough spot playing that altitude back-to-back. So how do you sort of structure the Pac-12 thus far?
Well, you know, last year, you look at the Pac-12 and you think, well, good basketball. Well, last year they only had four teams to make the tournament. Three of those teams were top three seeds, and Oregon makes it to, you know, to the Final Four. So, you know, how unique. Have three teams in the top three seedings, but only four teams overall. You know, to me, the Pac-12 is by far the weakest power conference there is. You know, we went back and we talked about the Big East. I have five teams in the Big East that would be slated in the top three of the Pac-12. So after Arizona and after Arizona State, I have three more Big East teams that would fall into place before my next Pac-12 team. So that's how weak I have the Pac-12. Arizona, obviously the class. Arizona State, though, I'll tell you what, Bobby Hurley knows how to coach. Bobby Hurley now in his third season, he's got the kids he wants. He's got the best backcourt in the Pac-12. I'm a fan of Arizona State besides what they've done. But, you know, Arizona's got Trier, Aikens, Aiden. They've got three players that potentially could go number one in the first-round draft pick last year. So clearly Arizona State number two with Trey Holder and Shannon Evans. They are by far the number two team. Those two are in. After that, we've got questions. You've got Oregon, you've got USC, you've got Stanford, and you've got UCLA. You know, Oregon, a team that went to the Final Four last year with Dana Altman, but only returned one starter this year. They have youth. Elijah Brown, a kid out of Cleveland that was Mike Brown's son that coached the Cavs and the Lakers, he was at Butler, transferred to New Mexico, was their leading scorer. Now he's transferred to Oregon. He's their second leading scorer. And then they have freshman Troy Brown out of Vegas and Kenny Wooten out of California, two highly regarded freshmen. So Oregon right now is a team that I have about 50th, and they're a team that I expect to get a lot better. And they're one of my dark horses that could make a run in the tournament. USC is a team that started in the AP top 10. I used them a couple times early. Five returning starters, and they have a Duke point guard that started 20 games at Duke several years ago, transferred out, sat out last year and played. So USC had six starters back. I mean, they went through an incredible stretch, losing six games this year. And all six teams, though, were decent. I mean, they lost to Princeton at home, which they shouldn't have. They lost to I shouldn't say decent. They lost to Princeton at home. They lost to Washington at home. And then they lost to Stanford on the road. And then, losses to A&M, SMU, and Oklahoma. But USC, to me, has the second most talent in the Pac-12 besides Arizona if they get it taken care of. And Stanford's a team that, you know, has been there, done that. They're only 8-8 now, but they've missed two starters up until now. They're scheduled to potentially come back in Dorian Pickens and Marcus Sheffield, but they're a team that I projected would be up here higher. Injuries caused them to not be here, but a conference with your top two, your next four, and then a bunch of mediocre teams on the bottom.
Well, I think what's so interesting about a league like the Pac-12, and there are some other leagues out there as well, is that you have some guys that are pretty decent coaches. You have some guys that just get a lot of talent and maybe don't maximize it to the level that they should. But this is about that time of the year. You know, we've got a lot of teams that have played about half of the regular season games that they're going to play, maybe a little bit more. This is the time of year when those really good coaches that have raw talent start to turn things around. So it sounds like maybe you think Oregon could be one of those teams here with a pretty good head coach in Dana Altman, a pretty good talent base. So, I mean, I talked about this on Monday's show with regards to Michigan State and Tom Izzo and about how, you know, every year it seems like Tom Izzo's teams just hit that stride early February-ish, then ride their way on into some deep run in March Madness. Is that something that you're kind of looking for a little bit here at this time of the year?
Yeah, I do. You know, I have my eye on USC, and I'll tell you what, UCLA deserves all the credit in the world. I mean, Steve Alford, you know, almost everyone knows what happened with his players in China. And, you know, why Leandro Ball transferred out, he was the middle ball. He was not LeVar. I mean, he is the worst ball player there was of the three. So he was not going to come in, be a one player, go to the NBA, and do what his older brother did last year at UCLA. So his loss isn't important. But they have a couple guards. Aaron Holiday is just playing great. They only returned one starter. You had all that trouble in China. You come back, and now you're 12-4. You're 3-1 in conference play. You're playing four freshmen or sophomore in your starting lineup. They're a team that I think just continues to impress. And I have my eye on UCLA as well, as if they continue to play this way, these young kids are going to grow up pretty quick, and they can make some noise as well.
All right, so we'll close up shop here on this talk of the Pac-12, looking at some of the bottom feeder teams right now. Cal, a team that's off to a very lackluster start. Washington State, a team that got some buzz in the non-conference and then has kind of shown its true colors. Colorado doesn't quite seem to be there yet either. Nice little bounce back thus far for Oregon State, but you know, not a whole lot expected from the Beavers. Is there that team in the bottom of this league that, you know, can pick off some of those upsets, whether it's because of the situational of playing Washington and Washington State back-to-back or playing Stanford and Cal back-to-back? Do you feel like some of those lesser talented teams here in this league, you know, can make some noise when they play better teams?
Well, you know, none of those teams jump out to me that are going to make any true noise. You know, like I said, Stanford is 8-8, and if you look at the standings, they're near the bottom because of their 8-8 non-conference schedule. They have some injuries that may come up. But, again, this is just a Pac-12 conference that hasn't gotten the talent to the lower echelon teams. And I don't see Cal doing anything. I don't see Washington State doing anything. You know, Colorado is going to be a team that is going to be a 16-17 win team. But, you know, I do have something I want to bring up about what you talked about. it's so unique in the Pac-12 because of their scheduling. Excuse me. This was actually in the Pac-12 weekly release this week. And since the Pac-12's gone to the two conferences, I think everyone knows by now when you take a road trip, you play Arizona, Arizona State, Oregon, Oregon State, Colorado, Utah, Cal, Stanford, UCLA, USC, and Washington, Washington State. You have your traveling partner that you play both at the same time in a road trip when you make the trip. So since they've expanded in the 2011 and 2012 season, only four times has a team swept Arizona, Arizona State. Only four times has a team swept Oregon, Oregon State. And, you know, you understand Oregon's been a good team. Arizona's been a very good team. But since 2011, only four times has a team swept Colorado and Utah. So you talk about that elevation there. You talk about how tough it is to play Colorado and Utah. Pac-12's had a lot of good teams since 2011, and only four times since that time, again, a team has swept Colorado and Utah. The other travel partners, Cal and Stanford have been swept six times. USC and UCLA have been swept seven times. And Washington, Washington State have been swept 13 times since that 2011 season. So that is something certainly to look at. When you're playing those back-to-backs, unique travel situations, you're staying in that region, you get an upset in that first game, I mean, you're an automatic look to play against in the second, especially if the line's short or if you're a favorite.
All right, good breakdown there of the Pac-12. Let's do what we do here each week on this segment, see if we can get a couple of best bets out of Rolf, one for Thursday night, generally one for Saturday or Sunday. You got one on the board here tonight that you're looking at?
We do. We're going to go to Middle Tennessee against Louisiana Tech. Middle Tennessee went to Florida, played International Atlantic this weekend. They were a favorite in both. They won but didn't cover, and that doesn't bother me when you're going into those Florida teams. They're a tough little back-to-back. Their only losses on the year for Middle were to Miami, USC, and Auburn. La Tech's a team that's struggling of late. They've had some injuries. They've been changing their lineup. They're 1-3 straight up in ATS their last three games. You know, and in their last game was the first win in four games, and that was against the UTEP team, missing your best player, and you had to shoot 55% to only win by nine when you were laying 11. So tonight my best bet is on Middle Tennessee.
All right, so what are you looking at for the weekend here? You got one that you have your eye on?
I do. You know, I played against Minnesota last night. Played on Northwestern against Minnesota. Minnesota, the whole world has heard about the Reggie Lynch sexual improprieties, and he's suspended, probably going to get kicked off the team. But you're also missing Amir Coffey. And, you know, people don't realize Reggie Lynch started 38 of Minnesota's last 40 games. The last two games are the only two games he's missed. Amir Coffey has started 39 of the last 40 games. The game against Northwestern was the first he missed. They're both going to be out against Purdue. Purdue's a team that is 43-3 at home. While they're not at home this game, one of those home losses was against Minnesota last year. They remember home losses. They're very few and far in between. I think this is a situation where we have a Minnesota team that's going to implode, have sanctions, and I think you have a fired-up Purdue team that doesn't mind taking it out on them. You know, they're going to be a double-digit favorite at Minnesota, I expect. I'm expecting the line to make an adjustment. It didn't last night. Even with that adjustment, I'm not afraid to kick a team when they're down, and I think Purdue will do that and against Minnesota on Saturday.
Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. What's going on over at the website right now, man?
It's a great run in college basketball. The NBA daily stat sheet going up. Going to start doing some football articles with returning starters in the next couple weeks. So just keep tuned and check in often.
And then you can follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Rolf Michaels, WagerTalk.com. Appreciate your time here, sir. We'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, thank you.
couple of good segments there today with Brad Powers and Rolf Michaels, a couple of very smart professional handicappers. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Whale Capper. We'll talk NBA and NFL playoffs with him. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. And then we'll also chat with Brent from DSI Sportsbook for this week's version of the odds report. Probably be a little bit of a shorter segment there with just the four NFL playoff games to touch on. But we'll hear where the sharp action is on those for the divisional round. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.